Hello, podcasters.
You took my line, Chris. What are you doing?
Well, no, it's. I thought either of us could say it.
No, it's clearly something I've been saying for the past 5 weeks.
Past 4 weeks?
Well, this would have been the 5th week.
Yeah. So you haven't been doing it for 5 weeks. I think it's not like a custom. It's not a tradition yet. That takes 5 weeks. 4 weeks is
so you
only
want to
a
break
thing
it.
You've done repeatedly.
I hate you so much.
Look, you broke it.
Now I have to go for another 5 weeks before it's a thing.
Before it's a thing, exactly. Well, I just thought it was fair that way, that I did it. And I kind of got tired of hearing you say the same thing in the same way. It was a stock phrase.
Did you prefer I say something different?
Well, I mean, or you could say it in a different voice, like...
Hello, podcasters.
Yeah, I like that. If you do that every week, I'm happy.
Maybe a different accent.
Can you do any other accents?
Howdy, podcasters.
No, you can't do any other accents.
No, you're right, I can't. This is Left, Right and Centre. This is what we're introducing. Well, it's soon to be Left, Right and Centre. This is the introduction for Left, Right and Centre.
You might have noticed that the introduction is especially silly this week. I think that's fitting because the show is also especially silly. Would you, accidentally,
though.
Yeah, we didn't actually realise until halfway through the show that it was entirely...
That the entire, like, second two-thirds was nonsense.
I think probably the first minute and a half was quite serious, hard-hitting.
When we stated our names.
Yeah, stated our names. We did that in a quite, like, a hard news sort of way, right on the edge, you know. I was hearing Bill O'Reilly on Letterman last night talking about how he used to be a hard news presenter, and that's what we were. We were like, you know, we slammed those facts right down. But then after about the minute and a half point, it was almost like a parody of what Left, Right and Centre normally is, wasn't it?
I think so. Maybe you should listen to that minute and a half. You'll find out in a minute and a half, I think, how silly it became. It's not really much incentive for you to listen forward.
No.
Asking you to do is listen to a minute and a half of the show.
Well, no, that's not quite true, because what I'd advise is you listen to the minute and a half, turn the volume on your computer off, and listen to the next... 45 minutes, maybe with the music cut out, turned off, and then turn the volume back on for the outro.
Okay.
Because the outro to the podcast, that is, because in that segment, we're again going to be really serious. Like, we're going to break some news in the outro, I think. Aren't we?
Let's do that.
I think we should. We'll have some...
Should we leave them with the show for now, though?
Hold on, we haven't told them how they can...
Just email us, leftfrontcentre@live.com.au, or Facebook group us.
Which is Left, Right and Centre, not Student Radio Left, Right and Centre, which is last year's group.
Yeah.
Finally, studentradio.wordpress.com.
Yep.
That'll be fun, I reckon.
That'll be dandy. Here's the show.
Student Radio may contain coarse language and adult content. Listener discretion is advised.
Hello, guys.
Hello.
Hello.
I would never get tired of that theme, and hello also.
It's Left, Right and Centre on Radio Adelaide 101.5 FM.
Or online, Casey.
Or online at radio.adelaide.edu.au/listen-online.
You love that.
I love saying that. I am Casey. I'm joined, as always, by Chris.
Chris here, yep.
By Matteo.
Yeah, by Matteo.
And Timothy right here.
Yeah, by Timothy.
And incidentally, there's been a little microphone malfunction, so Casey and Tim... Oh, sorry, Casey
very
and Matteo
cozy,
are...
They?
They're very cozy, they're hugging.
In fact, Timothy and Matteo. Mm-hmm. Not Casey Mattel.
Basically, I've broken the microphone. I've made it hum, basically, so I can just put my arm around Tim.
Yeah. Tim looks a bit uncomfortable.
I'm fine with this.
Tim's cool.
Very special thanks to Lewin and Bryce for bringing us up to now with Break It Down. How do you think the show went for them?
Well, I don't know. What do you reckon, Tim?
I think it's fair to say you're a little bit unconvinced there over there, Chris, especially a little bit on Britpop. You're not a fan of their take on Oasis.
Look, it's not that I'm not a fan of their take on... Well, I'm not a fan of their take on Oasis. That's true, but that's a small issue. I think the big thing is normally Lewin and Bryce have such a great dynamic. I feel like it's the intimate relationship between Lewin and Bryce, and I just feel the addition of an extra person really detracted.
So you didn't think that worked tonight?
Whoever that third man was, I just didn't feel that. I thought he interrupted.
Can I just say, with no vested interest, I thought Break It Down tonight with Lewin and Bryce was wonderful, amazing, just friggin' great.
Okay, so we've got conflicting opinions.
Well, I mean, look, no. Let me be fair. I think Lewin and Bryce were great. I thought that other guy, the third man, shockingly bad.
Well, I thought the already formidable dynamic was just enhanced.
What have we got on the show tonight? That's enough of Lewin and Bryce talk.
we are going to have a chat about the possibility of a double dissolution. And if you don't know what that is, you will know by the end of the evening.
I've been learning all my facts about Parliament preparing for the show. And it's interesting. There's talk of it because there's the government's having trouble putting their own legislation through. But I think we'll come to that a bit later in the show.
We're also going to be talking about Joel making a Fitzgibbon of things, I believe.
Joel Fitzgibbon, Defence Minister.
Yeah, talking about the troubles he's in at the moment.
And, yeah, we're also going to have some music and basically just whatever we come up with. I think we just wing it really here on Left, Right and Centre.
Going to have another story by the fantastic Thomas.
Mm.
All right, so let's start with something else.
We are going to have a chat about GhostNet.
Well, it's pretty mysterious, GhostNet. Tim. That's what I think about GhostNet.
Well, I'm thinking of many things when I hear the words GhostNet.
Are you thinking of, like, a ghost that is a net?
I'm thinking of that. I'm thinking Terminator. I'm thinking... I don't know what I'm thinking. What is GhostNet?
Well, it's not very effective at catching fish. That's the thing. Because the fish just go right through it, don't they? I mean,
GhostNet. GhostNet is something that's come up in the last couple of days. The University of Toronto, some researchers there have discovered that there is actually a very large sort of cyber spy program being run out of China. And it's, you know, they leaked it. They reported to the New York Times, and it's now gone over all over the world, and it's been making waves around. What do you think,
that's
Chris?
Right. Well, I mean, that's right. And I believe it came up because the researchers involved were asked by the office of the Dalai Lama to investigate whether there was any malware on the system.
The Dalai Lama has an office?
Well, the office of the Dalai Lama. It's like his position as head of Tibetan exile. Okay.
Can I just say, did you say malware or malware?
Malware.
Okay.
Yeah.
Malware. You know what? You know what that is. But basically... it's a bit of an issue because it's infiltrated all sorts of places, lots of embassies, in fact.
Lots and lots of embassies, especially Southeast Asian,
and,
I think.
Yeah. I suppose the other thing is lots of the embassies, that they're countries that China has some tension with.
Mm. Well, I think, I had a brief look through the list of infections that they were willing to release. Obviously, the researchers couldn't go into detail as to this because there are security risks involved, but mostly they were embassies in Southeast Asia, organisations that are pro-Tibet and pro-Taiwan have also been tracked, and a couple of very, I thought very interestingly, a very large Vietnamese petroleum company was infected as well. So there's obviously a lot of things going on here, and it's interesting that they've chosen... these targets.
Yeah, and also I'd like to point out this is something people might not be aware of, but there's a lot of stuff that they've infiltrated to do with India. And actually, although it's not, it's sort of like a bit of a slow burn. There's a lot of tension, or there has been in the past, especially during the Cold War, between India and China. Mm. And I think that's something to point, an important thing to point out when we consider where it's coming from and who might be behind it. But something that people might not be aware of.
Yeah, well, I think one of the most insidious things about this program is it's had sort of the New York Times called it big brotherish qualities. It had the ability to, you know, as it took hold of a computer, you could see the contents of the files, and that's not unusual. But it also had the ability to turn on webcams and microphones and other input media around the computer.
So theoretically, it could actually be monitoring not just what's happening on the computer, but what's happening in a room that the computer's on.
Someone just really wants to see what the Dalai Lama's up to.
Yeah, and this is obviously just. It completely compromises the environment of around which the infected computer is, and well, basically, if we are to believe that you know the perpetrators are Chinese government agents, then we can only imagine that they're really doing it to further their own ends.
Can I? I think probably there's not too much more to say about this because it's a bit of a mystery, a murky sort of issue, isn't it? But
that's what makes it so interesting.
I think we need to be careful to say we can't say for certain that it's the Chinese. There was someone I read was suggesting that it could actually be the CIA, for instance, operating out of China, which would be a good cover. If I were the CIA, pinning it on the Chinese would be pretty clever if you could get away with it.
Yeah. Well, the researchers from the University of Toronto were very cautious to say they were very non-committal in their essay about the possibility of the Chinese state being involved.
Yeah, so let's get on with the rest of the show. I think this is a. Did you want any other final words to wrap up?
Well, I'd like to point out that this just demonstrates sort of how fascinating the world of intelligence is. And if you'd like to see a fictionalised version of that, Spooks is on ABC 9:30 Mondays.
Aren't we meant to be plugging our own show rather than other shows?
Well,
I'd like to adopt spooks as an honorary part of Left, Right and Centre.
Okay, let's annex it.
Well, now let's further our own agenda.
Yeah. Well, we'd like to also hear what you guys have to say, about everything we talk about tonight, this story, everything else we talk about via our Facebook group, Left, Right and Centre, and via our email address, leftrightandcentre@live.com.au.
This is Student Radio at Adelaide Uni on 101.5.
On Radio Adelaide, it's Left, Right and Centre, and it is 12:12 a.m. in Vientiane, Laos. It is currently 26 degrees.
All right, we're going to have a little bit of chat about Defence Minister Joel Fitzgibbon. This is obviously federal. I don't think we have a state Defence Minister.
We should, though, Tim.
I don't think that's true. Anyway, he's been in a bit of hot water in the last week. On Thursday... A bit of hot water. The Sydney Morning Herald revealed that I think what's happened is the Defence Department, or specifically I think the Defence Signals Directorate, had been spying on their minister's computers. They'd actually accessed his computers, accessed bank details of close associates. And in the initial leak on Thursday morning, they identified one Helen Liu, as a security risk. And this is obviously a very interesting development.
That's right. I think that there are some initial, like, there was an outcry about the fact that the DSD had been spying on Mr. Fitzgibbon, but I think given what later came out, which is that Miss Liu, who's a close personal friend, paid for several flights, you can sort of make a reasonable case for their action.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, she paid for 2 flights to China, and he failed to declare them with the Registrar of Ministerial Interests, I think so. Yeah, which...
I mean, I guess you can say that it's from that point that it all really kicked off. And I mean, should we give Mr. Fitzgibbon the good graces of saying that it could have been a genuine mistake on his part, or...?
Well, I think my favourite part of the story was when the story first broke, saying that the Defence Department had spied on Mr. Fitzgibbon. We weren't really sure why none of this Helen Liu stuff had come out. All we knew was he'd been spied on because of this Chinese lady. And the opposition came out and said that Mr. Fitzgibbon should be sacked because his department doesn't trust him. I thought that was my favourite part of the story.
Yes, well, I think... Yeah. Look, I personally think there's a bit more of a case to be made there. I mean, the
issue is at that point, the opposition didn't know any more than anyone else.
They knew there was a mystery woman.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think the point that would be made there is, I think Kevin Rudd came out and said this on Thursday morning before it had come out that Fitzgibbon had actually done something wrong with the declaration of these flights. And Rudd came out and said, well, it's not really a surprise. Ministers have always had troubles with their Defence Department. I think Fitzgibbon he's had troubles with the bungling of the pay for the SAS recently, and it's just come out in the last couple of days that the Rudd government intends to take large amounts of money out of the defence budget in the next couple of years. So I think, yeah, there's obviously a bit of tension there, but it's just interesting to see the sort of the background workings in Canberra
That's true. And I think it's indicative of the fact that, I mean, especially in a situation where where the government's suggesting a lowering in defence spending, there's inevitably going to be tension and suspicion. Mm. And it's like this... There's a part of Yes Minister, I don't know if anyone's seen Yes Minister, but it's a great show, and they think about changing some legislation and then that would affect the civil services' pay. And then they say, but why can't you ever do it? Because who has to put it in place? Who has to, put the legislation in place?
Chris, guys? Do you get all of your political information from Yes Minister and maybe, like, the politician in the
advocate? No. I also take it from Yes Prime Minister, which is a separate show.
Okay. Well,
where it stops being maybe a little so jovial is, I suppose we have to tread lightly here, especially given Australia's close diplomatic and economic ties with China, is that you wonder if there would have been so much attention paid to this by the media and by the, I don't know, by the government if it was not in fact a Miss Liu, but in fact an English or an American lady, perhaps given the cultural differences. And yeah, I mean, I'm not accusing anyone of anything.
Just hurting words, yeah.
Well, it's been brought up, I think, somewhat validly, that would an equal amount of attention have been given to this issue if it were a Western person?
I think that's right. And you know, several people in the public have said that. Former New South Wales Premier Bob Carr noted that there's a lingering impression that she's only of interest because she's Chinese. If she was Swedish or Ghanaian, it would get little attention. And I think that's a valid point. I think to a certain extent, there is a suspicion of China, to some degree, at least in terms of the influence they're starting to exert. It's upsetting like the traditional power dynamic in the world with the United States since the end of the Cold War. And some people are a little suspicious about that, and other people are playing on it, perhaps.
I don't really buy that. I mean, I suppose it's a bit of a hypothetical as to if this person had, you know, if Helen Liu had been, you know, some Anglo-Celtic businesswoman. I don't really buy. I think this is the kind of thing that would have been made into a big deal anyway, because, you know, obviously a minister fighting with his department, it's always big news.
That would have, but would have, that, you know, like, because they're commenting about how they thought Helen Liu was a spy. They, you know, they said she had, they focused on the fact that she had connections to the Chinese government. And, you know, like, if there'd been a US businesswoman with connections to the US government, would that have been an issue?
Oh, look, if you ask me, I think it's just a good old-fashioned Red Scare. It's been a little while since we've been scared of, you know, Reds under the bed.
We all love rhyme. I know I love rhyme. Let's go to this, then.
Live from the North Terrace studios of Radio Adelaide, Left, Right and Centre Newsflash.
Have you ever sent an email to a friend or colleague and immediately regretted it? Realised the unfortunate way that last sentence might be misconstrued? Found a spelling mistake or forgot to add an attachment? Or do you just send it in a fit of passion only to realise your mistake seconds later? Well, Google has the answer for you in the latest of its ever-expanding list of exceedingly mildly useful Gmail Labs features. When a user clicks send, Gmail will now delay the sending of the email. If the user then clicks the undo link within 5 seconds, Google will abandon the sending of the message. If not, the email gets sent, mistakes and all. A forthcoming update of the feature will even allow users to change the amount of time that the email is delayed, up to a maximum of 10 seconds. However, some are suggesting that this new feature will only serve to propel the development of a new breed of highly fickle people. Dr. Michael Michaels, founder of Committerphobes Anonymous, said that,
if people know that they don't have to commit to sending their email, and they can change their mind as many times as they like, then what's that going to mean for productivity in the workplace? Some of the people that come through the doors of my office have quite literally hit rock bottom when it comes to making a decision and sticking to it. We're talking failed relationships, job hoppers. We even had one guy who came in that had trouble deciding between his blue socks and his navy socks. In the end, he decided to compromise by wearing his blue socks under his navy socks.
Dr. Michaels is not alone in his comments, with employers across the nation calling for tax breaks in return for hiring diagnosed committerphobes. Peter Peters, president of the Australian Employee Collective, is the organiser of this campaign.
Yes, well, we feel that the loss of productivity by committerphobes using this feature will cause an enormous flow-on effect to all sectors of the Australian economy. We furthermore feel that in order to safeguard against businesses shipping their operations offshore to avoid this effect, we need to provide an incentive to stay in Australia and to keep employing these people.
In response to this criticism, Google has suggested that employers turn off the undo email feature on computers in the workplace. Dr. Michaels replied with,
yeah, we thought about it, but let's not make any hasty decisions.
On Left, Right and Centre, it's 12:21. Now, the issue of the government's had some trouble getting legislation through. There's been the Alka-Pops legislation. There's been the, what's the
other one? The IR laws had to fight very hard for.
So there's the media and some others have raised the prospect of a double dissolution election, basically. So let's have a chat about that.
Yeah, have a chat.
I've been teasing Tim because that's how he introduces everything.
Yeah, how does it work? What are the constitutional ways it works?
Right. My understanding is, and you know, you read constitutions for fun, so you know a bit more about this than me.
I do, yes.
But my understanding is, if the government is trying to get a bill through the parliament, and so the way it normally works is it goes through the House of Representatives. If it passes the vote there, which it will because they're the government, it then goes to the Senate, where they debate it for a while. They go off in their committees and do whatever they want to do. They make their amendments if they want to. So they then vote on the bill. If it's amendments, they vote on the amended bill, and it goes back to the House. If the Senate doesn't pass it, and the government really wants to pass it, and they keep trying to pass it, it's not passed the first time, 3 months later, they can come back and try and pass it again in the same form. If it's the bill in the same form and the Senate refuses to pass it again, the Prime Minister is then allowed to ask the Governor-General to dissolve both houses of Parliament And by convention, the Governor General does that. Doesn't have to, of course, but that's what he would do. Then, so, what the situation right now is...
It's that, assuming the Liberal Party and the Nationals oppose a bill, which is generally likely, I can't see it. I mean, there are some circumstances where everyone agrees, but very rarely, and the Labor Party supports it, then the government needs the Greens and two of Stephen Fielding, Nick Xenophon, or Barnaby Joyce.
Yeah,
is that
I'll
right?
put Barnaby Joyce in there mainly because he's a bit of a he's a Nationals. He's technically the Nationals leader.
I would compare him
in
to
the Senate.
Could he be compared to former Republican presidential nominee John McCain?
He is a maverick. Yes, yeah. The M word. Yes. So the
reason this has come up now is because of this Alcopops bill that Steve Fielding's refused to pass because he's had the deciding vote, effectively.
And I think part of the thing that gives it its magnitude is the fact that they had to pay back, the government that is, had to pay back about $300 million.
Quite a bit of money. And there was also about, I think, $1.56 billion worth of revenue in the next 3 years.
Which is how they paid for so much of their budget.
Yeah. So... And this is interesting. It's only happened a couple of times in history, double dissolutions, and they're especially interesting because, you know, a prime minister, the government can call a general election pretty much any time, but they're only allowed to dissolve the House of Representatives whenever they like. The only way they can get rid of a hostile Senate is through a double dissolution.
And so, also, when we come to the question of whether we think Rudd would call a double dissolution, it's important to point out that historically, I mean, obviously it hasn't happened often, but often the reaction has been bad for the incumbent government.
It's about 50-50. I think it's happened 7 times.
Yeah, 6-7 times. And the major time, the really unresolved time, was during the government of Gough Whitlam, when there was a lot of problems in passing his budget. But what's interesting about this example...
How do we think it would go if there were to be one called in this case?
I think Rudd would win.
Yeah, well, basically, just reading here, you know, strategists from the Greens, I mean, that they think that...
They're bound to do well out of it, surely.
Well, yeah, well, they think that if one was called, that they'd, you know, they'd pick up an additional seat in each state.
And in each state? A Senate seat, not a House.
Yeah. Possibly two in Tasmania, and maybe even Western Australia, and that would bring their total representation to what, in the Senate, anyway, to 13 seats, over a dozen.
I don't know if I believe that.
Yeah, well, that would not surprise me at all. I think it's fair to say, like, even if we wondered about those numbers, I would be very surprised if the Greens picked up less than 6 seats in a double dissolution election. In addition to what they have. Is it 5 now?
They have 4 now.
Certainly, it's. I mean, like, Stephen Fielding isn't going to get a seat again.
No, Steve Fielding is effectively a goner. He hasn't really performed for his
and he really only got in part of preferences and stuff. So, I think the basic question is, do we think a double dissolution is likely?
I think it will depend on how things go
If they manage to pass Alcopops.
But I still
don't think it's likely.
Yeah, well, I don't think Alcopops is the kind of thing they'll go to a double dissolution on, but I've been thinking ever since they got in that they have to deal with the right in Fielding, they have to deal with the left in the Greens. And I think the Labor Party, it's pretty clear the Greens will be the big winners if they have a double dissolution.
This was brought up, though, in the last term of government. I can't remember the bill it was based on, it came up on, but it was brought up while John Howard was still Prime Minister.
It might have been the GST for a while. Couldn't have been with... there was some Democrat, because Meg Lees...
Heffernan and Bill Heffernan.
Yeah, and there was some question about whether they'd vote for it, so that...
I apologise, what I referred to was, in fact, the start of this term.
Oh, okay.
When they were first trying to IR laws. And they thought they wouldn't pass. But no, you're probably correct as well.
Well, who knows?
Anyway, so it's a really interesting topic. And
I think we should follow it, see if anything comes up. I don't think anything will, but...
I would be very surprised if something happens.
What have we got up now, guys?
We've got this, guys. Tasmanian surgeon Dr. Stephen Wilkinson has started driving a military-style Hummer to reportedly put 3.5 tonnes of steel between him and the dangers of Tasmanian roads, which have a death rate significantly higher than the national average. Dr. Wilkinson reportedly commented on his decision, saying that it almost doesn't matter how safely you drive, all you can do is protect yourself with a big car. Some people, however, point out that if they are hit by Dr. Wilkinson's Hummer, they'll be more likely to die than if they were hit by Dr. Pilkington's smart car. I suppose what makes this okay for Dr. Wilkinson is that if he were theoretically to allegedly maim someone with his Hummer, he'd be able to treat them on the spot. Does that mean we should allow Hummers, but only for practicing medical doctors?
No, I think we should oblige everybody in Tasmania to own a Hummer. I think that's the obvious solution. I mean, if two people drive into each other with a Hummer, neither of them will get injured. I think that's the clear solution.
The trouble I have with that is it would just look really obnoxious.
Yeah, well, I mean...
And the roads would need to be really wide?
No, I think we should subsidise Hummers in Tasmania. And let's keep in mind, guys, they're pretty much the close equivalent or road legal equivalent we have to monster trucks.
Or tanks.
Former Australian Idol co-host James Matheson has resigned as Australian Idol co-host, citing a desire for anonymity and a more unstructured lifestyle. So, guys, what is his fallback?
I have absolutely no idea.
I think his substantial talents.
Andrew G?
No. Well, no, well, look, I think there's another one. There's a different one.
Could he go on Australia's Got Talent? Because I think he's in a band.
I don't know.
Oh, you mean go on Australia's Got Talent as a contestant?
As a contestant. He's in a band, so I think he wants to pursue music.
I think he's just gone there as a host, as in compete, but his skill is hosting.
That's not bad. He can try and take the hosting job from the host. He can try and, like, yank the microphone and do the job.
You're saying his talent would be usurping Grant Denyer?
Or like Danny Minogue. Grant Denyer. Because she's a judge.
All right. Oh,
he could judge Danny Minogue, but that's sort of out of his role on Australian Idol. He doesn't have experience in that area.
Yeah, he's a host. He should go on as a host.
Australian darling and allegedly self-proclaimed pop sensation has found herself in hot or at least lukewarm water.
What's her name, Casey?
Well, you'll find out. Now it's Delta Goodrum. She cancelled her booking to sing the national anthem at Melbourne's F1 Grand Prix, only to be seen clubbing at 1 a.m. that night and reportedly looking very glamorous. Although she was not paid to sing the anthem, she and her partner adopted Australian darling and former pop sensation Brian McFadden were reportedly given business class flights to Melbourne, VIP hospitality at the track, and a ride in an F1 Minardi for McFadden on the morning of the race, valued at $7,000. Is Delta Goodrum still an Australian darling in your eyes, or is her reputation tarnished forever?
I think it definitely has been the Australian Grand Prix, not Grand Prix, I'm afraid there, Casey.
Did I say that?
You
did.
I thought it was Pricks.
The Grand Prix. Yep.
The Australian Grand Prix.
Can I just say, I thought her reaction was completely justified. I mean, what the hell, business class? This is media darling, pop sensation, just, you know, darling, the wonderful, ravishing Delta Goodrum. What's she doing being given business class flights to Melbourne? It's no way to treat a darling.
She actually took the flights.
I'm sure she went on the plane. Well, I'm sure she wasn't happy about it, Chris.
Left, right and centre panellist Timothy Big Joe McCarthy celebrated his birthday yesterday. For all you podcasters, that's March 30. He's officially turned old. He's asked for no gifts, expressing concern about being sent lumps of coal and dead animal carcasses. So, Tim, your life is over. How do you feel?
I just feel so disappointed that I haven't achieved anything. I think life ends at 20. I think that's the saying, isn't it?
That is indeed the saying. 0 to 10, you're young. 11 to 20, you're middle aged. 21 to 40, you're old. 41 to 60, you're ancient. 61 plus, you're prehistoric.
Hang on, I thought life began at 40, but if we're saying that Tim's like effectively dead,
life begins at prehistoric, I think.
Right. So what's you gonna do for the next 20 years? I guess same thing as been doing for the first 20 years.
Whinging.
Yeah, and sleeping and eating.
Yeah.
Yep. A book about fromage frais, French cheese in English, lengthily titled The 2009 to 2014 World Outlook for 60 Milligram Containers of Fromage Frais, has been chosen as the 2008 winner of an annual contest to find the world's oddest book title. The organiser of the contest, excellently named Horace Bent, declared that, "I assume that either strip and knit with style or curbside consultation of the colon would win, but I'm thrilled that the public steered clear of smut and bestowed the odd title crown on a worthy winner and turned the supermarket chiller into the petri dish of literary innovation." Established in 1978, the competition's inaugural winner was Proceedings of the Second International Workshop on Nude Mice. And some other notable winners include Development in Dairy Cow Breeding and Management, and New Opportunities to Widen the Uses of Straw, High Performance Stiffened Structures, Butterworth's Corporate Manslaughter Service, Living with Crazy Buttocks, The Big Book of Lesbian Horse Stories, People Who Don't Know They're Dead, How They Attach Themselves to Unsuspecting Bystanders and What to Do About It, and If You Want Closure in Your Relationship, Start With Your Legs. Guys, the 2008 winner is reasonably priced at £800. Will you guys be rushing out to get a copy?
I have already ordered a copy from Borders, I must say, and I'm looking forward to it.
I might consider spending £800 on curbside consultation of the colon if someone could just explain to me what the hell it is.
Who knows? That's enough for Rapid Fire News for the moment. Let's go to this now.
Student Radio at O Week on Radio Adelaide 101.5 FM, as studious as you are.
Could I just say, I noticed you checking your voicemail during the song break.
Yeah,
okay, yeah, just popped out the studio for a little while. I left us a bit worried. What was it?
Well, I just realised that I'd got a voicemail message from Susan, who's one of the student radio Overlords. She's a coordinator for our programs. I'll just play you the message that she sent me.
Cool.
Hello, devotees. You've reached the telephone of renowned radio personality Casey Briggs. I'm probably broadcasting on Radio Adelaide 101.5 FM right now, but if you leave me a message after the tone, I'll do my best to find some time to get back to you. Ciao.
Hi, Casey. This is Susan, your director from Student Radio. Just saying that I'm really liking what Left, Right, Centre has been doing for this year so far. However, I do not like what Illuminati have been doing. The Ferrero Rocher thing, that was a bloody failure, really, wasn't it? And also eating and drinking in the studio, that is against station policy. They probably left a mess and the content just wasn't appropriate. So I've decided that I'll offer you their slot, 2 hours, 2 hours a week, actually, yeah. That's what I've decided to offer you, 2 hours a week and no more Illuminati.
Student Radio Overlord Susan, they're apparently offering us Illuminati on Thursday nights at midnight.
Wasn't that amazing, really?
I'm quite surprised and thrilled, really. For those who don't know, Illuminati is a student radio program equivalent to ours, but it's on Thursday at midnight rather than Tuesday.
And, well, hosted by the lovely... Well,
not
well,
lovely.
I think they're lovely. Susan obviously doesn't...
Well, clearly, Radio Madison. Adelaide doesn't think they're much cop if they've been cancelled, really.
You say they're lovely, Casey, but I actually think... I mean, I've heard some nasty rumours about those, yeah, Gemma and Madison.
I've heard some horrible things, too. Is anybody willing to just read them out on air?
No. Or to just, like, I'm retell what we heard. Yeah.
Well, I mean, there are a couple of things. Generally, they were pretty mean and nasty to Radio Adelaide staff. They were quite snarky, I heard. Reports of them leaving Skittles around the studio.
Look, Skittles are lovely. Everyone loves Skittles. They're fruity. They're sweet. But it's really annoying, especially, like, station workers. They come in the next morning. They can't eat the Skittles because they've been on the floor. Mm. And all they can do is pick them up and throw them in the rubbish.
The Ferrero Rocher thing Susan mentioned. They were trying to beat, I don't know, some misguided quest to beat the world record for the most Ferrero Rochers.
Well, they were calling it an unimpressive record, but I think, guys, we can call it an unimpressive attempt to beat an unimpressive
record.
And it
was really boring.
It was extremely boring.
It was the last straw.
And then after that, I mean, Susan gave them a talking to, and then they threatened to leave the station for Nova. I mean, it's just ridiculous. They did something really cruel to Blue Monkey Jazz, which is Wednesday's student radio midnight show. They brought an elephant into the studio. They also got the monkey, which is Blue Monkey Jazz's mascot, and they fed it to the elephant, calling it a... What was the segment called?
Well, I mean, it was actually like a really clever segment title. It was, you know, Elephant Eats Mascot Monkey. I mean, you know, that was good, but it wasn't enough to save their skins.
So I guess the biggest question, what do we want to do with Illuminati slot? Do we just make an extra hour of Left, Right and Centre?
I think that's what the people are crying out for.
I think we annex it and sort of... what's it called? Lebensraum? Living room? So we have room to sort of live there. Mm. I mean, not live, obviously, but...
Yeah. Or maybe we can just chuck all the stuff that isn't good enough for, like, a primary Tuesday broadcast. We can just chuck it on the Thursday one. It'll still be more popular than Illuminati.
It's our B-sides show, Mateo. That's what it is.
Yeah. And yet it'll still just be better than what was on there before, really.
Really? I mean, just terrible.
Look, we're really amazed by this news.
Mm. We're going to have to do some brainstorming, work out what we're going to do.
Yeah, we've got twice as much work in our hands now.
You know what we haven't done in a while, guys?
What's that, guys?
This.
Yeah.
An unidentified mystery woman has allegedly been turning up to Krispy Kreme, claiming to be the manager of Sunrise Weather Girl, Fifi Box, and collecting donuts on her behalf. The major scam, which has reportedly been going on for months, came as a surprise to Box, who says that she doesn't have a manager and hasn't seen a single donut in that time. According to Adelaide Now, what has upset Box most is not being involved in a major international incident, but that she hasn't received any of the donuts. She's reportedly a big fan of Krispy Kreme. Would I be right in thinking you must really like donuts to go to all this trouble?
Hey, I don't know how many of you guys have had Krispy Kreme. It's one of those things the eastern states get that we don't, but they are awesome donuts.
Yeah, look, that might be true, but the thing I don't understand about it is, being her manager, like, surely either Fifi Box would know, and when they didn't turn up, she'd complain, or the person claiming to be Fifi Box's manager would have to pay for the donuts anyway.
But what confuses me is that Fifi Boxers has said that, you know, the part of the incident she regrets most is that, you know, just hasn't been able to eat the donuts. I mean, it's her schedule as Sunrise Weather Girl, TM, so full that she can't just go out and get Krispy Kreme donuts by herself. I mean, is the salary for being the Sunrise Weather Girl so low?
Well, also, she's up so early in the morning, she's going home really early. Do you really want to eat donuts at that time?
Yeah, but they're baked fresh every morning, Casey.
I don't understand this phenomenon, apparently. Retired police officer John Comparetto claims he was robbed by the dumbest criminal in Pennsylvania, who reportedly chose a police officer's convention as the place to commit his perfect crime. The criminal mastermind apparently held Comparetto at gunpoint and demanded money, surprising him as he exited a toilet stall. The man who fled after being given a presumably small amount of money was pursued and arrested by some of the 300 police officers who were at the congregation. I see two possibilities here, guys. One, this guy is not only the dumbest criminal in Pennsylvania, but the dumbest criminal in the world. Two, he's an avant-garde street performer who will later claim the whole thing as a work of postmodern art. Thoughts?
I don't think the two are mutually exclusive.
I think he could be both.
Yeah. I think Rapid Fire News is a great segment, but I don't think any of the stories are funnier than stupid criminal stories.
Well.
Yeah, I mean, the best do it, Leno, O'Brien, left, right and centre. Stupid criminals can't beat it.
Indian military scientists are reportedly working hard to develop a curry which is fit for space, so that India can carry out its objective to put a man into space by 2015. The Indian Space Agency wants its astronauts to be provided with familiar food, but traditional curry is problematic for spaceflight because, as everyone knows, hot, spicy foods are difficult to digest in zero gravity. As a result, a specially engineered curry is required. While the concept of creating mild curries does seem somewhat daunting, the Indian scientists involved seem confident. Developing a dosa for space has never been done before. Fried bhajis? Very challenging. We can use only minimal oil. But if the mission demands it, we are ready to look into it, one said. This may be a small step for Nan, but is it a giant leap for Vindaloo?
Can I just say to him, I think this is funnier than Stupid Criminals?
Yeah, this is pretty good.
Can I say, is it racial profiling if it's self-perpetuated?
I had trouble reading that paragraph.
Yeah.
British psychologist Richard Wiseman, who 3 weeks ago called for online submissions of photos of ghosts, has reportedly admitted that he cannot explain one of the hundreds of photos that was submitted. While many of the photos are just motion blur or have been digitally altered, Wiseman said he cannot explain one picture, which is a photo of Tantallon Castle, which supposedly shows the ghost of James V in the window. Wiseman explained that people are often keen to find ghostly explanations and to kid themselves about the paranormal. But equally, science must be open to possibility. You have to hold fire when you can't explain something or you haven't all the information. Do ghosts exist? Or, if so, will you be calling Ghostbusters?
I think that's definitely who you're supposed to call, isn't it?
It may be who you're supposed to call, but does it mean you will? I mean...
I think what this proves is that GhostNet is doing its thing. I mean, it's got one, hasn't it? It's got one in the net.
That's a good point.
According to Crikey.com, Australian relations with Pakistan are in dangerous waters. After Gus, the prize pooch of Ambassador to Italy Amanda Vanstone bit Pakistani Ambassador to Italy Mistaznim to Aslam. The serious diplomatic incident which occurred at a cocktail party held by Ms. Vanstone have allegedly become the time taken to fix up that incident meant the real diplomatic work of the mission suffered, and Amanda's reports back to DFAT, which in the main extol the virtues of otherwise of the restaurants she patronises on a regular basis, were later than usual. Now, obviously, animal lovers like Matteo here will be pleased to know that Vanstone was successful in her crusade to prevent Gus being put down, but I think the real question is this. If you were Gus, would you have bitten a hand that doesn't feed you?
I wouldn't, no.
Can I just have include a caveat here? My love of animals does not extend further than cats and ducks.
And also...
I think they should have shot the thing.
Dogs named Gus...
Yeah, but I don't think that's his fault. I think that's a Vanstone thing.
I mean, you have student radio presenters named Gus, but not dogs.
I might shoot the student radio presenter too.
It's not nice. Be nice. That's
bitchy. It's nothing personal. His name...
He's
nice, though.
He has great taste in shirts.
Okay. North Korean President Kim Jong-il has ordered the opening of North Korea's first Italian restaurant, despite the fact that much of the population of the country continues to endure starvation and poverty. The audacious move was made possible after Mr. Kim reportedly sent North Korean chefs to Naples and Rome to learn to replicate genuine Italian pizza and pasta through a process of, quote, repeated trial and error. The North Korean government is reportedly importing wheat flour, butter and cheese to supply the restaurant. Many are comparing Mr. Kim's remarks to the famous Let Them Eat Cake gaffe that dashed Marie Antoinette's hopes of being a campaigner for the poor. Is that fair on Kim Jong-il?
I think the ship's pretty much sailed on him being a campaigner for the poor there.
I think I think this all the stuff about Kim Jong-il is pretty harsh. I think what this demonstrates is that he wants people to expand their culinary, you know, their culinary experience. And I think that's admirable.
I think it demonstrates that he is a campaigner for the poor if he's leading a country composed entirely of poor people. And also, can I think about the trial and error? I mean, were they trying, like, pineapple doesn't go so well with pasta. Bamboo.
I have no idea.
Doesn't go so well with pasta. Tomato and meatballs goes pretty well with pasta. We'll go with that, guys.
And now this.
In June, October is a good few months away. People struggle to comprehend the amount of time until December. A cold July is practically on its way already, and even mediocre August could be reached with strong determination and a brisk jog. But at the moment, people all across the country are still living an oppressed half-life under the iron fist of the most tiresome month of the year, March. By the end of March, everyone is utterly sick of the lingering summer, and as the last few spatterings of a final half-hearted heatwave encroach yet again on what should be cool days filled with blue skies, a slight breeze, and endless elderly people feeding bread to an infinite number of ducks, you'll excuse me if I'm slightly miffed about everything. Having said that, this isn't a particularly long segment, so while I'm not exactly time-restricted in terms of complaining, I thought I'd do better to concentrate on a single irritant. And here it is. Many of you are no doubt aware how fast the number of stores in this country are multiplying in order to satiate the ravenous need of the more cosmopolitan individuals of the modern day to possess things. In fact, no one seems to be aware of the true extent of the problem. It seems that over past years, money has become something of an embarrassing inconvenience, and so it must now be exchanged as fast as possible for something more immediately useful, like a fluorescent, automatic, polyphonic, ringtone-enabled, hands-free thermos. Shoes, in particular, along with their places of purchase, seem to be multiplying like an overactive math student, and it appears that, like many things, their mere acquisition has become almost a symbol of status. Strangely enough, that's not the part I have a problem with. As far as I am concerned, this particular issue of sheer shoe quantity, and even this strange coveting of footwear, is a minor inconvenience. The true problem is that of the change in shoes from objects with a purposeful design to items of mere so-called fashion. One of the results of which is that well-fitting, well-made, and stylish shoes are remarkably hard to find, due to the apparent direct correlation between fashion and discomfort. I will freely admit that my own problem is somewhat exacerbated by the fact that, like most members of my family, my right foot is slightly larger than my left, to the effect that a comfortable shoe has a fairly limited range of size to fall into to avoid either compacting my right foot or slipping repeatedly off my left. But the problem isn't so much one of discomfort, but taste. While it may be difficult to find a good-sized pair of shoes, it's not impossible. But I find that there is one greater discomfort which cannot be eliminated from most shoes easily at all. Self-consciousness. Since this is quite the important statement, and also to expand my meandering monologue further, let me say that again, in more detail. Comfort is not impossible to attain, but I would gladly do without it in exchange for the knowledge that I had a pair of shoes I could walk down the street in without looking like a total pillock. And now we come to the crux of the problem, in short, vanity. Shoes are uncomfortable for precisely this reason. If people cared what level of comfort they provided over, say, their appearance, millions of dollars worth of money could be saved on supermodel ankle operations, and we'd become a nation of sepia-toned, brogue-wearing chaps from the 1920s. And so, of course, we opt for appearance every time. But is this an ideal solution? Well, not really. Inevitably, fashion turned to the outrageous. The shoe designers, as they always do, have got it wrong again, and as they turn out countless hideous new shades of green and heels 5 feet high and made of rubber, the people must now start to realize, wait a minute, all our shoes are not only uncomfortable, they're hideous too. Rather amusingly, although I suspect it may be more so were I not myself experiencing the resultant problem, because of the trend toward fashion rather than comfort, we've eliminated style to boot. We have fought the shoe war, and we've lost. We're uncomfortable, we've got tassels, beads and frills. In short, our feet look frankly hideous, adorned as they are by the lowest form of clothing on the planet. And yet, we're very in. And now, back to the studio.
Now, we were talking, this is something we were talking about earlier during Rapid Fire News, the World Odd Book, what is it? The oddest, World's Oddest Book Title Competition.
We thought it was sufficiently funny to read out a couple more.
Okay,
yeah, because we actually omitted some,
I
can you believe?
I skipped some in the list because there was a very long list in front of me, and some of these that I've now skipped, there were like, I read a few, Living with Crazy Buttocks, The Big Book of Lesbian Horse Stories. We also had Bombproof Your Horse.
Which I think can be worked into the one volume, Bombproof Your Lesbian Horse.
Or The Big Book of How to Bombproof Your Lesbian Horse.
Also, I like The Stray Shopping Carts of Eastern North America, A Guide to Field Identification.
It is a tricky problem, identifying, you know...
It's a huge social problem.
Well, especially if they move from state to state. Like, if you get one from Nebraska and it ends up in, you know, like...
As long as you don't get a Western North American shopping cart straying into the east.
Yeah, they use an entirely different system.
You don't want rogue shopping carts.
Exactly.
The perils of shopping.
It's 1 a.m. We have to leave you for another week.
Again, but...
For another week.
We're back in 2 days.
Yeah. 2 days, in fact.
Like 47 hours for more left, right, centre.
We've got a lot of work to do.
Yeah, we've got like a meet tomorrow.
Well, actually, I hear that Madison and Gemma are out of a job. Do you reckon perhaps we could draft them into doing some writing for us?
Seriously, give us 2 days, even if we put a slapdash together.
And if you think if this goes successfully, maybe we take over Break It Down. Maybe take over Lewin and Bryce's show.
And Blue Monkey Jazz don't have their mascot anymore, might be in mourning for a few months, so maybe we can take over while they're in mourning and then let them back, because they're a good show. They're good guys.
Well, give them probation.
But the monkey was the main strength of the show. I think it's going to suck. We'll listen to it for a little while.
Blue Jazz, that sounds good.
We're yet to decide. Just... I think hopefully, I reckon let's give it 4 months. We could have all of student radio.
And if you want us to have all the student radio, you can also listen to the podcast and sort of simulate that effect, rather.
You can find that on the student radio website, studentradio.wordpress.com. You'll also find all the blogs of the other shows while they still exist up there.
Okay, well, I think that's basically all we've got time for. Let's extraduce ourselves, as Matteo would say it. I've been Christopher.
Okay, so I think I've finally been persuaded that's not a real word. I'll introduce myself. I'm Matteo.
I'm fighting for outroduce as a word. I'm Casey.
I looked this up in the OED. Outroduce, extraduce, neither of them words. Outro is a noun. Goodbye, everybody. Yep. I've been Timothy.
That was amazing.
That was brilliant. That was perhaps the best piece of radio I've ever heard.
Ever?
In my life. Even better than Orson Welles' War of the Worlds. Because, you know, that was that thing where he pretended that it was a real radio broadcast. I mean, of course, it was a real radio broadcast in the sense that it was on radio, but it was a real radio broadcast and there were aliens invading, basically, or, you know, like, strange things coming in, and all this stuff happened and the music was brilliant. That's great radio, but this was better.
I agree.
And you sounded a bit like Piz there, Casey.
Is that television's Piz?
Veronica Mars's Piz, Casey.
Why do you keep bringing Piz up?
I don't know, I just think you sound like him.
I guess that's a compliment.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
In any event, I think Susan, student radio overlord or overlady,
Overlord of Darkness.
She agrees with us about how brilliant our show is, you know, and how not brilliant, Jemison and Mads' show is. Mm. That is Illuminati, which is on Thursday nights or was on Thursday nights.
Was on Thursday nights.
Because as you've heard in the show, if you listen to the show. Which you may not have, because you may have followed our advice not to listen to the show, but just listen to the outro and after the intro.
And if you've done that, please follow my advice. Go back and listen to the show now.
Yeah. So it's almost like a choose your own adventure, isn't it? It's like you start at page 1, you go to page 93, and then you're told to go back to page 26. And that's just...
That's a very boring choose your own adventure story with only one path.
Well, it goes... Then from 26, it goes to 98, like you follow it through.
But from 98, you have to be given the option to go to
17,
to like 17 or 36, but 17 ends in instant death.
That's tricky, I suppose.
So we have to work out how to kill someone via iPod.
Like Jemison? Or Madder? Mad. Was it Jemison and
Madder? Gemma and Madison.
I know, but I...
You despise them so much you're making up names for them?
That's what I'm doing, apparently. But I think flabbergasted is probably the word.
I'm bamboozled.
You're bamboozled? I'm flabbergasted about some of the things they did.
Like bringing an elephant into the studio.
That's just, it is ridiculous. And then not only feeding Blue Monkey Jazz's monkey to them, which means they're now called Blue Jazz, which is a terrible name.
and nonsense. Nonsense. That's just two words.
Yeah, blue jazz. Think about that. I mean, and furthermore, they then got some cocaine, put it on the elephant's trunk, and snorted it off the trunk. And that's just
live on air or just before the show?
Live on air. You didn't hear all that sniffing like last week?
Oh, I thought they were just very unprofessional.
Well, they are very unprofessional, Casey, but they're also a bit addicted, I think. They went to London, they met Kate Moss, and it was downhill from there. Allegedly, that's the problem. That's what I need to say, isn't it?
Well, we've only heard unconfirmed reports from Kate Moss.
Unconfirmed reports.
And she's always high, so who knows to what to believe what she's saying.
No, but when she can describe Gemma and Madison, you know, like, with ear-splitting detail, what does that mean?
Very high-pitched.
Very high-pitched detail.
A little bit of detail, but
very high-pitched.
You can't
be making that up. You can't, like, never have met someone and then just be describing them exactly. That doesn't happen.
You can if you've read a book about them.
Is there a book about Gemma and Madison?
I imagine, well, they're so up themselves. I think they've written their own book about them. And mailed it to every library in the world.
And then probably read it out on Illuminati and laughed.
Yeah. Giggled.
Giggled.
Because they're the kind of gals they are.
They do giggle. They are a bunch of giggling geese.
So anyway, Left, Right and Centre was lovely.
Left, Right and Centre was lovely. And we talked about GhostNet, Casey.
Yeah.
I've got a bit of an admission to make.
A confession?
A confession is the word, I think.
What's that?
And that is, in fact, that I'm behind GhostNet. It's me.
Really?
Yeah.
Not the CIA.
Not the CIA. Not China. The Chinese. Not Mossad.
Not Kate Moss.
Not Kate Moss. Not some remnant of the East German secret police who are called... don't prompt people on radio. The Stasi, Casey.
Of course.
How did you not know that? Anyway, I'm behind it. I've been using it to monitor left, right and centre listeners.
So radio, like breaking news, radio's Chris.
Yeah, radio's Chris.
Just go with just Chris.
I think renowned radio personality.
No, that's me.
Well, I'm renowned too, aren't I?
No.
I mean, come on, we're equals in this venture, so that suggests we have a relationship as peers.
And peers, the not title, peers, but peers.
Peers, and so the title could be bestowed upon me as well.
Renowned amongst yourself, maybe. Anyway, the point is...
The point is...
you're behind...
GhostNet.
The spying on people's webcams.
Spying on people's webcams, listening to microphones.
Listening to microphones.
Yep. And you know there are a lot of people who sing very badly into their computers?
I did not know
that. That's a revelation to me. Why
into their computers?
Well, because they're trying to record music, or muzak, or music?
Musico,
yeah. Basically, it's quite terrifying.
How many people do you catch singing R. Kelly's hip hop or Trapped in the Closet into their microphone?
Two, Casey.
Two?
Gemma from Illuminati.
Yeah.
And
I'm not surprised.
Renowned radio personality Casey Briggs.
I'm not surprised about that either.
No, I think you knew that was coming, didn't you? Yeah.
No, well, it's true.
Ugh. I cannot believe you talked about that last week. That was the final straw for me, in my opinion of Gemma.
Okay.
The fact that you spent 10 minutes, I mean, you brought it up, but she just gushed and gushed gushed about R. Kelly.
There's no responsibility on my part.
Yeah, I really think Gemma is the elephant in the room right now.
Hmm.
Gemma is the thing. Like,
the elephant in the student radio room.
That we're all trying to ignore.
Mm.
And I... Sorry, I just thought... Never mind.
Okay.
I think really this is all...
I think we're...
We're running out of things to say.
Yeah.
Not that we ever... Like, we've always got plenty more
also,
to say.
Also,
but
we do plenty more to say. We also have to save some of it, for our second hour of the...
Which is coming up, given that
This will go out on the internets on Thursday, which means that you'll be able to listen to this and then listen to the second hour.
Left, Right and Centre B-Sides collection.
B-Sides and Rarities.
B-Sides and Rarities, yeah.
I don't know if you can have rarities from a show that's only four weeks old, but...
I think you can. Like, that could be stuff we're yet to produce or...
Okay.
Stuff that we produced a long time ago, before we were Left, Right and Centre, when we were the Chameleon Hour and the Duck Hour, respectively. Mm. Or when we were just Mateo, Casey and Chris.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it'll be fun. Yeah.
Tune in to Left, Right and Centre on Tuesday and Thursday nights.
At midnight.
Get into contact with us via email. Mm-hmm. leftrightandcentre@live.com.au. Yeah, not leftrightandcentre@live.com.au. Some people have made that mistake.
Although, live.com.au. Casey, they're spelt exactly the same. That's a ridiculous distinction. It doesn't matter because it's in text. Like, the internet is a textual thing.
No, they have a new internet now that taps into your mind, and also it interprets the way it's a context based.
So you can have
it's called like this. Okay, Google have come out with this thing. They call it Google Context. Basically, what it does is it reads your mind as to what you wanted to type, not what you actually typed.
Yeah, that
and performs the search based on that.
So that actually seems terribly more effective, doesn't it? Yeah. Like it
we could really do away with the keyboard. It's just the keyboard's there for nostalgia purposes.
It'll prevent those awkward mistakes where high school students actually, you know, high school young boys, sort of adolescents, accidentally type booble.com into their computer when they clearly mean to type Google.
Yeah.
Cool. And then their mothers come in and they're like, "Oh my god, what's this?" And they're like, "Oh no, it's a mistake, honestly."
Yeah.
This won't happen with Google Context.
Yeah. When these boys are just gonna type, you know, vaginas into Google, see what it comes up, and they made a mistake.
They made a mistake. It's easy to do, and the consequences can be massive. It could be a curfew. You could be grounded. Actually, being grounded.
Do curfews still exist?
I think curfews exist. I have a curfew.
Really?
Yeah, I'm not allowed out before 9 p.m.
Oh, okay. Is it self-imposed?
Well, partly.
Okay.
I think really my parents wouldn't allow me out before 7, but I say, no, why not extend it 2 more hours?
Yeah.
And have we covered everything? Like, is there anything we haven't... Have we talked about the blog?
We haven't... No, we haven't.
The blog is studentradio.wordpress.com, and you can read about Left, Right and Centre, or you can read about Illuminati, but only...
While it still exists.
While it still exists. There are 4 things. We're actually going to retrospectively replace each of their entries, because it's just a shitty little corner of the blog, really.
I think just... Yeah, well, yeah.
I mean, that's the truth of it. Like, I don't want to be blunt, but...
It's a stain on...
Stain on left...
I'm not on Left, Right and Centre, on Student Radio.
Well, I mean, I guess it will be a stain on Left, Right and Centre in the sense that...
It'll be the seedy underpass belly.
Yeah, the seedy underbelly that we don't really want to... Because we are actually... We're going to have to be in their slot, which means we are sort of
one of us,
linked to them.
Yeah. Are we expected to giggle? Or eat, break world records or something?
Look, Tim, I think, would be quite happy, not with the giggling, but certainly with the eating a lot.
Yeah, and then when he's not eating, he'll nap.
Which is something...
He does.
He does. Good night, listeners.
Good night.